Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Menards is your electrical headquarters. We carry all the tools and testers you need for any electrical job. Stack up your toolbox with Southwire electrical products today. Right now, save big money on Southwire electrical tools, testers, cable ties, wire, and cable. Shop our huge selection in store at Menards. Ranked number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at Menards.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Yeah, I'm ready. Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I am Jay. Clone 73.
Oh, like, I don't know what that...
I malfunctions from time to time. And, sometimes I give a reset. I don't know what that was. I wasn't ready for that beep, though. It kind of scared me.
Oh, gosh. This one's been asked for a long time. That's definitely be a part one of, like, we did with the trains a couple weeks ago, where, you know, they're not going to be consecutive, but they'll be mixed in kind of deal.
Yeah.
But pterodactyls.
No.
Or pterosaurs, which is the correct terminology now.
What do you, like, for a pterodactyl? They call them pterosaurs?
The pterosaurs is the actual, so pterodactyl used to be the family name, now it's pterosaurs. Still with the, PT at the beginning.
So is there no such thing anymore as a specific pterodactyl?
It's just not a, like, a biology term anymore.
Yeah, okay.
It's more like a kid term.
When did that happen?
The 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I thought pterodactyls was like a regular mainstream...
pterosaurs.
...thing. But, yeah,
now... Pterosaurian lizard.
So, pterosaurs basically encompasses, the whole flying dinosaur.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, we have no proof of flying dinosaurs, only gliding dinosaurs.
Oh, okay.
Pterosaurs are flying reptiles.
So pterodactyls were flying reptiles. Were. Now they're pterosaurs. Yeah. Okay. All right. I didn't know there was
They're not true dinosaurs. They're not dinosaurs. They do have... They're actually really distantly related to dinosaurs.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're not even dinosaurs?
No.
Did not know that.
Very different. Their biology is very different.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not dinosaurs.
So they're just... What were they? Birds?
No, pterosaurs. So I think this is a big problem.
Okay, yeah.
With a lot of people understanding like prehistoric biology.
Yes, me
is
included.
That there's family groups that quote unquote no longer exist.
Extinct family groups.
Yes.
That we're referring to.
Yeah. Okay. So like pterosaurs and dinosaurs, like we talked about dinosaurs several times in the show. Dinosaurs are argued, it depends on what biologists or paleontologists talk to. Dinosaurs are not birds, in my opinion.
Okay.
They're their own group that birds came out of.
Okay.
So dinosaurs are not birds.
Pre-birds.
But yeah. Just like, I mean, there was, you know, pseudo-reptile mammals. You know, there was things that had both characteristics that the mammal group came out of, so on and so forth. So like pterosaurs were an offset from an ancient lineage that would become the dinosaurs, but would also become the pterosaurs, monitor lizards, mosasaurs. So like that same family group spawned several different family groups.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So pterosaurs, even though they coexisted with dinosaurs, mm-hmm. they were not dinosaurs.
Right. Makes sense.
Just like mammals and fish coexisted with dinosaurs.
So a synapsid is a mix between a, basically in between of mammal and reptile?
Yeah, kind of. That's a simplified version.
So what would be the name of something that's half between like, you know, mammal and a bird?
A dinosaur.
Okay. And what about bird and reptile?
No, I don't know.
That's probably still dinosaur, right?
Yeah, that one's definitely dinosaur. Yeah. Bird and reptile is dinosaur. Because dinosaurs, in my opinion, and you know, shared by several early paleontologists, but other paleontologists will argue differently, the dinosaurs are not reptiles, and dinosaurs are not birds.
Right.
But there are paleontologists that believe dinosaurs are specialized reptiles, and there are paleontologists that believe dinosaurs are specialized birds. There's even a small group of paleontologists that believe birds are reptiles.
But couldn't they be separate? Couldn't they actually just be birds or reptiles? And it's just by their, but it's just so long ago that biology was just so different that it's, we can't.
It could
compare.
Be any of them. It's an opinion based thing.
Okay.
I think they're their own family group because they had very unique characteristics. A model just came out for sauropods, the giant guys, the biggest things, you know, ever walk on Earth.
Right.
With their respiratory system.
In their neck, right?
It goes their whole, from their hips up.
Oh, okay. And that's the new speculation, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some paleontological, like, fossilized evidence that suggests this.
Yeah.
It was such a complex chamber system, but it makes sense for an animal the size of a skyscraper to be walking around.
Yeah. I guess I never, like you said, with quote-unquote dinosaur biology, just being a whole separate thing as opposed to what we're used to now.
Yeah, like there's people like specializing in fish and amphibians.
Yeah.
And there's people that specialize in mammals and reptiles. Like, they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, herpetology is the one that I don't get. That's a study of reptiles and amphibians.
Okay.
It makes no sense to me.
Because they're not the same at all, really.
They're not really the same at all.
They just kind
of
take
They are the two closest related lineages of vertebrate on land.
Yeah.
But there's still tons and tons and tons of differences between the two lineages.
See, I guess I just never was able or made full circle or made sense of dinosaurs, how we kind of know or knew what they were. As far as not being straight up bird, as far as not being a straight up reptile.
I promise you, you're going to get, for dinosaurs specifically.
In this episode?
No.
Oh, okay.
But sometime relatively soon, you will have all of your dinosaur questions answered in maybe like a 90-part episode.
Oh, you're making me salivate.
Because dinosaurs are a huge group, right? You know, thousands of species from animals the size of skyscrapers, to armored tanks, to the biggest carnivores to ever walk the earth, to animals
tiny
that fit in your hand.
Right, yeah.
You know, so to kind of lump them into other existing groups is, to me, is wrong, but also very hard.
Yeah.
Because the biologies that made them supersized and super small, they hit the small, you know, they were tiny vertebrates to animals that aren't 10 feet tall.
Right, yeah.
You know, African elephants could walk underneath their belly and not touch them.
Yeah.
You know, Supersumosaurus, Argentinosaurus, some of the really big guys that we still, they've beaten constantly size estimates.
Right, yeah.
Where we said, you know, 60 tons is the maximum a land animal could be. And then we found one that was 70 tons. And then we found one that was 74 tons.
Right.
Then, you know.
It's always a bigger fish.
What we talk about with animals breaking biology or the laws of physics, you know, they will figure it out.
Or rewrite the laws of physics.
If there's a benefit to being that big, then they will get that big.
If the niche needs filled, something's going to fill it.
Like, the only reason mammals get as big as, you know, biggest thing ever is a mammal, the blue whale.
Yeah.
The only reason they got that big is buoyancy. The respiratory system is very advanced, don't get me wrong. But as far as compared to what we think of sauropod respiration systems, very different. The only reason they get away from some of the rules is because they're in the water.
Mm-hmm.
A mammal that big couldn't exist on land as far as we know right now.
There might be one, a slide rock bolter.
That's not a mammal, is it? I thought we called it a big catfish.
Well, catfish, cat, mammal, fish, not mammal. Slide art bolter if it's part catfish, part mammal.
Back to pterosaurs.
Okay.
We're going to talk about some modern-day pterosaur sightings. And we're going to talk about what could be happening. And if pterosaurs do exist, where are they hiding?
Okay.
Because they're not small animals.
Okay.
Especially the ones being seen.
Now, so pterosaurs, just to recap again, is a whole family group, basically?
Yes, a whole lineage. So there were members, and we'll talk about it towards the end,
yeah,
that were the size of tree frogs.
So, okay, that's what I was going to ask.
Things like Quetzalcoatlus and
giant
Hagosaurus that were 40-foot, 45-foot wingspans.
Yeah.
T-Rex-eating monsters.
Probably thermal vent riders, if you ask me.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so I got a group of modern day, ish modern day, last 100 years, pterosaur sightings, a little collage of them, even one from our home state.
Oh.
And then we're going to talk about pterosaurs some more.
Okay.
All right. So this is the pterodactyl in the 1930s, Needwood Forest in the county of Staffordshire, England. And the English people that listen to the show, they always love it when I try to pronounce Staffordshire. Staffordshire. I think that was probably the most correct one because the D I wasn't pronouncing the first two times.
We'll find out.
Thank you guys for letting us know.
Yeah.
Was a chase or a royal force was given to Henry the Third's son, Edward Crotchback, the first Earl of Lancaster in 1266. It was owned by the Duchy of Lancaster until it passed on to the possession of Henry the Fifth. In the 1770s, Francisco Noel Clark Modoon published a collection of poetry collected from the Needwood Forest, which contained his own poem by the same name, as regard of one of the most beautiful local poems. And the same would be said about the forest, which it was undeniably enchanting local, filled with magic, mystery, and ancient lore, as the forest was curious off and on. Today, however, things are sadly very different. And most of these ancient woodlands is now tragically gone. Presently, the area is comprised of 20 farms, one of which is a large dairy farm. Less than 500 acres of woodland now remained.
Oh, wow.
So some parts of the forest are still open to the public, including Jackson Bank, a mature mixed 80-acre woodlot, which contains a hoar cross near Burton-upon-Turnet, which is owned by the Duchy of Lancaster still.
Still, okay.
And then there is a Bagot Forest near Abadus Bormley, which is claimed by the largest part of the Needwood Forest today, which takes up its name from the Bagot family, seated in the centuries of the Staffordshire Blitful Hall.
Okay, so a lot of history, a lot of landowners.
This is, yeah, situated somewhere 9 miles east of Stanford and 5 miles north of Regley. In the home of the Bagot family in the 14th century, while present home of mainly Elizabeth, the Gothic facade added in the 1820s and designed properly. In 1945, the hall is then neglected in, state, sold by Garley Bagot. Isn't this great? Do you want more history?
So we're just getting like the history of the land, I guess.
Yeah, so it was in this the ancient owners. Backdrop in the woodland, a historic figure, huge old halls that sometimes depicted strange occurrences back in the summer of 1937.
Okay.
So basically, this is an ancient place full of ancient history.
It's full of mystery, magic, and historical lore. There three of go. My favorite things.
In the summer of 1937, when the late Alfred Tipton was a young boy, it was during the holiday of 1937 when something strange and monstrous was seen in the small yet eerie area of the local old woodland. According to Tipton, one particular morning, he and four of his friends were been playing in the woods in several hours when they were taking a break, sitting in the warm, dry grass, soaking up the sun. Suddenly, says Tipton, they heard a shrill shrieking sound that was coming from the trees directly above them. As they craned their necks to look in the upward direction, the five pals were horrified at the sight of a large, black beast sitting almost on its haunches in one particular tall and very old-looking tree, and shaking the branch up and down with its claws tightening around it.
Okay.
There was no mere large bird, however. Tipton said it reminded me of the devil himself. I still don't forget things, and this is what I say it looked like. He added that the creature peered down at the five of them for a few moments and then suddenly opened its large and shiny wings, which were easily a combination of 20 feet across. It took to the skies in a fashion that could be accurately described as part flying and part gliding. Before being forever lost to the sights, perhaps 15 or 20 seconds.
So it took off, but it was gliding away more?
Yeah, so it like flapped at first and then kind of glided.
Okay.
Which would be an animal of that size that was flying would do those
things. That's all it needs to do, yeah.
It would, you know, condors and stuff like that have notorious trouble taking off.
Yeah.
And once they get up, you know, that's kind of what they do. And that's our largest flying bird we have right now.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Significantly, they were shown various pictures, photographs, and drawings of a wide variety of large winged creatures that either roam our skies today or did in the past. One that Tipton said most resembled the creature that he and his mate saw was a pterosaur. Of course, a pterodactyl is long extinct. However, Tipton had in mind that the beast and the boys encountered were extremely similar to the legendary winged creature of the distant past. Were the boys merely spooked and confused at the sight of a large exotic bird? Or was this an escaped zoo or zoo escapee, like a circus escapee animal? Or was this just a pterosaur that they had seen plain as day?
I have my speculations it could have been.
Yeah, do you want to talk about it? That's all I have for that one. I have tons more. A bunch of these are like smaller sightings.
UK, right?
Yeah, UK, 1937.
Then it all adds up. It's the right zone. It's the right time period for a sandhill crane.
I hate you. I wasn't expecting.
I didn't think you were.
I wasn't.
No, I don't. I don't know. I mean, pterosaur, shiny wings. Let's go with what.
Shiny wings. So to me, I don't know what that means as far as iridescent.
Right. It could mean it could be iridescence. So it could be.
We actually have some pigments fossilized from some pterosaurs.
Ooh, okay.
And it definitely seems like they were highly sexually dimorphic.
Oh, all right.
So the best example for that is like peacocks. As today I can point out, you know, female peacocks are brown, one mottled color, and male peacocks are blue and green, you know, with purple stripes,
crazy
colors. But it seems like a lot of these animals, birds, modern day birds, which pterosaurs are not birds. But comparison of large flying animals.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them have their hidden patterns underneath their wings.
Okay.
So when they're flying, they're not sticking out like a sore thumb for predators above them or something
right,
like that.
Right, they're only for the...
But when they are on the ground and they're doing like a dance, they can show off. And they may even be in like big eye patterns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what popped in my head is that it may have been a sexual display as in like... They're blue underneath or whatever. They're shiny blue.
Okay.
Or they're green. He never said a color.
Right.
But
just shiny.
Shiny. It also could have been wet.
Right.
Let's say it was drying off from the morning dew.
Okay.
Birds like that bask, like they have to. Condors and vultures and stuff like that, they have to dry their wings before they fly because they're so heavy.
Right, right. It makes sense.
But I don't know. What do you think?
Or it could be like leathery skin that catches the light that makes it look shiny, you know, wet, leathery skin. I mean, you got a lot of options there, so I don't know where to... But he saw, 20 feet wingspan. Is that roughly what he said?
Or is it 20 feet in combination.
Okay.
So 10 foot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Which, for pterosaurs and even pterotorns, which are an extinct group of large bird
yeah.
That's not out of the realm of possibility. 20
Absolutely
feet
not.
Is right down the middle.
Absolutely not. I'm just trying to gather whether, you know, if he's speculating, is it bigger?
And this is 1937.
The
word dinosaur was coined about 50 years before this.
Okay.
So we were still thinking dinosaurs at this time look like big lizards.
Yeah.
Like they were still recreating dinosaurs that look like big iguanas and stuff like that. Pterosaurs aren't dinosaurs, but they were digging pterosaurs up with dinosaurs.
Right.
So
one would speculate that they're...
Just keep in mind that he's giving a pretty accurate modern description of a pterosaur versus this is 100 years ago-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so their idea of what a pterosaur looked like, the pterosaurs weren't unknown.
Right.
But what the idea of a pterosaur looked like was much more reptilian.
Right.
They had big teeth. They almost look like halfway between like a naked swan and like a monster. A lot of times pterosaurs are described. Even some paleontologists thought they were large, long-necked bats.
Okay.
So the other people drew them as giant mammals that were flying.
Gotcha.
But big ears and everything, like, they look like giant, long-necked, long-faced bats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time, you know, pterosaurs didn't look like they did today, but I'm just, that's a point to be made.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, that's just a point that's made toward his credibility, you know, with his story. So, I mean, but that's one in the UK, you know, a good sighting. Last time we talked about these guys, or, you know, we brought them up from time to time, pterosaurs, but modern day sightings, you know, relevant, is usually like West Coast, South America or something like that.
A lot of them, West Coast, even the Midwest,
gets
a fair shake of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I got stories from all around.
Mm-hmm.
My next one's from Middletown, Ohio.
Ooh, we've been there.
Yeah, so we had our live show.
Yeah.
Hillbilly Horror Stories.
That's right.
This is a secondhand report given off the Gulf Coast from the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. The sighting of a flying creature, bird, bat, pterosaur. It's like their category.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hi, him and a bunch of guys, about 17-year-old, were looking around an old barn one night and they saw a large featherless bird. He said it was standing like a bird would, but it was about 6'4" tall. The skin appeared to be like leather.
Mm.
That occurred sometime in the early 1990s. This was the time that it was an undeveloped area, just farm. And they entered the barn, and the flying creature that they referred to as the bird turned, looked at them, moved its head like it was about to screech or something, and then they all ran out. So a very limited report, but
yeah,
they never said pterosaur. They said large leather bird.
Yeah. And, you know, this very, I think I shared this once before. Reminds me of a bat behavior.
Sure. I'm not rolling out giant bats.
And so here's an example I can relate to this. I think I told you. When I was a little kid, we used to have, you know, Sunday school at church. And when you were the kids, when you go into church, the adults would all stay in like the, you know, the big part where they do the normal. And then when you all the little kids would go down to a separate room, and they'd usually have a different parent there that kind of runs the kids' version of church that day. So my dad was assigned this particular Sunday. And so we go down, it's like the basement area is like this big room set up. It was nice down there, but they had old photos on the wall of like old basketball teams from our school. And my dad sees one. He's like, oh, you know, I wonder if that has the names on the back. So he takes the picture frame and he flips it over. And when he flipped it over, there was names on the back of the frame. So he was focused on the back of the frame when he flipped it over. But what he didn't realize, and all of us kids saw and we screamed immediately, is when he flipped it over, there was a bat on the wall behind the photo. And it just, I still remember it today, it turned its head like almost a 180 and just looked at like everybody. My dad's a foot in front of its face, doesn't even see it. We all scream and he turns around and looks at us and we all like slid back from the table like to the other side of the room. And we're like, bat! And he turns around and looks at it. And he's like, oh, he starts, drops the thing down. But the bat did the one, it did like the thing where, like you just said, it turned its head and looked at all of us like it was just getting ready to scream.
They see fine. So here's the misconception with bats is they don't see. Like, yeah. They're blind as a bat. Now, bats see fine, but they use echolocation.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So that takes a minute for the signal to get back and them to interpret the signal.
Is there any chance that, oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. So that's probably what it was doing.
So he's looking to see what's over there, sending out signal, getting it back, and then he's going to react.
And the signal is all going.
We're talking about sound, you know, it's moving 700-something miles an hour.
Yeah, we probably overrode its senses screaming. But do bats have, this is a memory that's like lost in, but do they have like yellowish eyes? Is there a chance they can have yellow?
Kinda, yeah.
Okay, because I distinctly remember seeing yellow eyes when it turned around and looked at us.
Yeah. My next one for you is from California. So yeah. Jonathan Whitecomb's report from a Ropin in Lakewood, California.
Ooh, the Ropin makes his return.
Yeah, the Ropin's, you know, Indonesia, you know, it's not anywhere near this. I think we did the Ropin on Patreon.
I don't even know if we did a full episode on it.
Because I think Orang Baktay, it came up in the Orang Baktay episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was a side piece to an original.
Red giant bat.
Is that the Ropin?
No, Orang Baktay.
Oh,
orange or red giant bat.
Gotcha.
Because... do you know where the word orange comes from?
Probably a mix between yellow and red.
No, the word.
Oh. No, I don't know.
Because I finally looked it up. It's the tree was called an orange. The fruit was named after the tree. It's the orange fruit. And the color was named after the fruit.
Ah, so what did they call that before the fruit?
It was brown. It was type of brown. Which, so, if you know, orange is brown. You should know that.
Kind of.
You take the color scale. The shading scale just turns to brown. It is brown.
Kind of. I mean, you can get brown. You can get brown a lot of ways.
No, okay. Pterosaurs. Feeling certain about eyewitness credibility and about the correct identification that appears more rare than often is the Ropin itself. And this is from Phantoms and Monsters. When I interviewed the person, yesterday I read the email from the eyewitness who was seen a flying creature in Lakewood, California. Only one day earlier, there was a subsequent conversation by phone and a person verified her credibility. Details in her description also verify the high probability that it was an American Ropin. And they even have a scientific name for it.
An American Ropin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ramphorhachiidae petrosaurus.
Okay. That's the American Ropin specifically. Mm-hmm. All right.
Which I always think it's funny. Not funny, but funny when they give scientific names to cryptids and stuff
Yeah, the things that I guess aren't provably real.
Which it's not even that bothers me. Is it a scientific name, like you give, like it's a family name.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So how do you know what family it came from until you have one? Because we talk convergent evolution, animals look like right, animals yeah. all the time. Like crabs are the best example, carcinization.
Yeah, everything turns to crabs.
Yeah, I mean, completely unrelated crustaceans, you know, right. as far as they could be, look identical.
Right, exactly.
At midday in the backyard of her home in Lakewood, a lady first paid little attention to the barking of a nearby dog. She was focused on her computer when she heard a strange noise. She looked up to see a strange winged creature that immediately flew off, startled by the human who had suddenly come out from underneath her gazebo. So she was underneath the gazebo. She walked out, scared the monster away.
Okay.
Monster's probably going for that dog.
That was barking at it?
Yeah. As a creature unfurled its massive wings, lady surprised or made a loud, it's, she was surprised by the loud noise it made. It was like a heavy fabric.
Oh, okay.
And I know exactly the noise. Like when we let down the sides of the tent at the fair.
Yeah.
Like that's a heavy, like a super heavy fabric.
Right.
And when
yeah.
it unfurls.
Unrolls out.
It does yeah. make a really unique noise.
Okay.
But yeah, the long-tailed creature flew off the large tree of the neighbor's yard, whereupon the lady ran into her house and to tell her husband. The two of them then drove around the neighborhood, camera in hand, searching for what the lady later referred to as the dragon pterodactyl.
Hmm, okay. So it had a long tail. That's significant.
This ropin, well, it had a wingspan of estimated 5 to 6 feet, was perched on top of a storm drain in Lakewood, California.
Okay.
So yeah, long tail. And some pterosaurs did have super long tails. Some
yeah.
had nubby tails. Some had almost no tail.
No tail at all, yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, the pterosaur family group is hundreds of, I believe when I looked it up researching this, it's like 400 species have been identified.
And that's just all through fossil record.
Yeah, and remember everybody, for fossils, it's 1% of 1% of all living species have fossilized.
Which is means there's probably more, a lot more variety?
Yeah, oh yeah, saying? Yeah, okay. Hundreds of, yeah, I would be comfortable over their reign, their whole time
yeah.
reign, thousands of species. Shoot. I'd be comfortable with that estimate.
Probably still growing.
Tens. But yeah, so this is the first time I've seen it called a ropin here in the U.S.
Okay.
The ropin will get its own episode.
I'd say usually it's only associated with Indonesia, you know, that.
A certain, just a couple Southeast countries, Asia. A couple yeah. forests, actually.
Yeah.
Like really a couple forests where the ropin are so seen. There's been so many expeditions for them.
Yeah.
A couple guys, like there's a video of a ropin that's really cool that you could say maybe real, maybe not real.
It sounds like a Russian name.
Ropin?
Yeah.
I think it means long tail, I believe.
Okay. It just sounds, you know, it sounds like something someone.
Ropin.
Yeah, a ropin.
Yeah. All right. My next one's for you is in Georgia.
Okay.
On Wednesday, July 18th, 2012, a lady was driving her two sons on Highway 27 in Franklin, Georgia, around 8:15 a.m. when they saw what she called a flying dinosaur. She said, "I was so shocked at what I had seen, I started yelling at my sons to look up, look up. I asked my oldest, 'Do you see what I'm seeing?' And he goes, 'Wow.'" The lady's son told his mother that it looked like a pterodactyl. I asked the lady some questions, and this is the Q&A form, so it's going to be asked, and this is from Lawn's Phantoms and Monsters again.
Gotcha.
Did it have a tail? Yes, it had a tail, a very long one, she said. Was the creature flapping its wings or just gliding? She said, it was just gliding across the road. And he added the and because she just said it's just gliding across road.
Oh, okay.
About how high off the ground was the creature? I can't, and she says, I really can't say how high, but how it was long enough that I knew it wasn't a big bird. But yeah.
Okay. Well, typically big birds don't have long tails. Some do, but typically, I can't think of one.
I do have another one in Georgia, but before we get to that, I think it's time for a Flavors of the Forest ad.
Good. I'm hungry.
You're hungry?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's play one of our new ads. Jay, I maybe hooked up a cable to Bob the Giant Mushroom and maybe plugged it into my brain, and I was getting a very strong message.
What did he say?
He said Flavors of the Forest is coming out with a new flavor.
A new flavor?
Lion's Mane Mushroom. The ultimate thing to meld mushroom and the human brain together.
Wow.
It's coming. Bob the Giant Mushroom was telling me, everybody has to try this new flavor. Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath, Lion's Mane.
So this is something I can, another food addition enhancer I can add to my food?
Lion's Mane, the superfood. The reproductive organ of the Lion's Mane Mushroom. Mm-hmm. Coming to Flavors of the Forest. Where can they be on the lookout for these new additions?
You can find this new additional flavor at flavorsforest.com/corn.
Be on the lookout for Bob and his kin.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing some more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she's decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. My dog Grace loves it. She just gobbles it up. Go check out Badlands Ranch. You can get there at badlandsranch.com/corncrew and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/corncrew today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
And we're back. Wasn't that great?
Still on the lookout.
Still on the lookout. No, there's a new flavor coming out. Everybody pay attention.
Exciting.
But yeah, another sighting near Wilder, Georgia.
Okay.
It was about a year and a half ago, maybe a little more. I saw what I believe to be the same animal from directly below, which she's talking on the same thread as the previous story.
Gotcha. Okay.
The tail was really riveting to me. You could see its shape at the end of it. It kind of was like the shape of a spade. It stuck right out.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about. It's very important.
Yep.
And then there was another one from the same area that's much older. There was two flying creatures that might have been a rare species, normally nocturnal but temporarily displaced by a storm, perhaps a pair of flying in the daylight out of necessity. If they're nocturnal, Georgia certainly has many places for these creatures to hide. Basically, another lady was just saying that she'd seen two flying creatures similar. She thinks there's something native that is super rare.
Okay.
And that's all she's saying.
That she thinks it's negative?
Native.
Oh,
native.
Native. Okay. Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. But yeah, what do you think about those? So Georgia has a raptor.
Georgia raptor. Well, I mean,
these are smaller than some of the other ones we've talked about so far.
Significance would be the both had tail.
All three encounters had.
Oh yeah, because the one was two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know she didn't go into a lot of detail, but they were kind of all building off the same post.
Yes.
Like saying, yeah, I seen the same kind of thing in the same kind of area, and here's what you know.
Yeah. I think very significant to mention the tail, and like you said earlier, the spade shaped to it.
So there are species of pterosaur that have long tails with no spade.
Okay.
There are species that have that spade.
Okay.
Pterosaurs are some really good pressed fossils,
mm-hmm.
where you get the wing outlines and you get some of their fluff. They had fluff. They weren't these big scaly beasts. They had, as far as we know, we don't know much about their chicks, but their chest, they had some basic, like almost like a down. It's their own kind of version of it. So it was not feathers. It was a, like we talk about co-virgin evolution.
Fluff.
Where they get their own version of that stuff.
Like silky chickens?
Like silky chickens. But yeah.
What?
No, it's just, so yeah, it's just interesting that they said they had a tail spade.
Did I ruin something?
No. No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not mad at all.
What? Okay. I was just going to let it be dead for a second. I couldn't hold in the laughter.
But yeah, so Georgia had a couple of them. Like I said, this is only part one because I think there's so much here to do. Like there's a Daytona Beach in Florida has had hundreds of sightings of them.
Ooh, and you know what's significant about Daytona Beach in Florida, right?
Yes, I do. Save it.
I will.
You want another one?
Yeah.
This is from the Pine Bearings Institute. Ooh. Adam Benedict.
Pine Bearings and...
Institute. It's just the name of the website. Oh, remember Adam Benedict's books and stuff
right.
Pine Bearing Institute. But he has all kinds of cool encounters and stuff like Daryl Ashley, age 68, witness one. Location of sighting, Lansing, Illinois. Summer of 68. 1968, that'd be exact. Here's what the message says. I was 17 in 1968 when I was going to my neighbor's house in the late spring or early summer. The sky was clear and only had a few clouds across it. I got outside and I noticed a peculiar silent and calm. Not even one bird was making any noise. As I got to the sidewalk and before I turned right to go next door, I caught the glimpse of something just behind me in the eastern sky. I turned and looked and I couldn't believe my eyes. It was a pterodactyl flying overhead. It was about the size of a Piper Cub airplane. Large. Small airplane, large animal.
Bird. Yeah.
It had a grayish blue body with bat-like wings and had a mixture of reddish-brown areas on it. As I watched this thing fly over 100 to 150 feet from me, it was just 30 feet or so over the trees. I tried desperately to get someone's attention to witness the thing with me, but no one, no cars, no one on the street, not even the person in sight from me, what I could see out the window. I decided to yell it to see if I could get its attention. I yelled, and it turned its head slightly as if trying to pick up on the sound it was coming from. But it turned its head away from me, and I yelled the second time even louder, and it turned right back to, or it turned back to its right, looked directly at me, and opened its mouth.
Hmm. Okay.
Now keep in mind what you said earlier.
Yeah. Echolocation?
I saw it had rows of teeth and the 4-foot beak, and they put beak in quotes.
Okay.
Not quite a beak, but a beak.
Snout more like it.
And it didn't make any other sound. Then I thought I was having to hide under a car or something, and the thing just kept its course, turned its head back straight, and flew due west. Never came after me. Its head was a brownish red, and it had a knob or a cone part. It looked to be about 2 foot long, and it being a brighter red than the rest of the body.
Its head.
The cone part.
Okay.
The back of the head that was a cone.
Okay.
You see some pterosaurs, they have that, like, a long...
Yeah, oh yeah. It's like a turkey snoot, but going backwards?
Yeah. It's a crest, a bone crest.
Okay.
It made a slow, continuous stroke, like its skin-like membrane wings, and the claws are its, quote-unquote, hand-type bony fingers in the middle.
Hand-type?
Yeah, because they only have 3 fingers in the middle, so it's not really a hand.
I understand. I think, okay.
Bats and pterosaurs both had that.
Okay, I was going to say, you're very much describing a bat.
Birds have it too. It's less
significant. Okay.
Because they just have the one little finger that sticks out, depending on the bird. Some birds have 2.
Yeah.
But it's happened several times.
Oh, yeah. We talked about one of those birds on. Wasn't the stink bird?
Stink bird. Yeah.
Freaky Fauna Friday. Check
it out. It had feet that were tucked under its body in a long tail that had a dark, quote unquote, knot at the end of it. Kind of like the spade shape.
Okay.
I watched in all the whole duration for about a minute, maybe 90 seconds from beginning, before it just went out of sight over the western horizon. I only told my friend I want to see it one more time in my life. Later in life, I've told more than a few, not caring what anybody thought. Now I've read stories of other people seeing these things. Now I don't feel crazy. What truly amazed me about the sighting is that it was in Lansing, Illinois, just one block off a major road, Terrence Avenue, and only a few blocks south of the interstate I-394, and not in some off-the-beat trail far off Civilization Forest Park, and considered a wilderness area. For of other oddities that happened in my life, this by far is the strangest.
Interesting. Okay.
And I have 3 like short ones from the Pine Barrens Institute.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's cover this one. So again, he sees this pterosaur flying
with a bright red.
Didn't give very good details on the colors.
Yeah.
Not a good definition of the size is huge.
Right.
Which is odd for the long-tailed pterosaurs.
Oh, okay.
They're normally the smaller ones.
Okay.
And that comes to flight because we think they use that tail knob to help them steer and stuff like that.
Okay. Like a rudder on a ship.
Yeah, or the tail on a plane.
They're literally probably more better example. I'm an idiot.
It's the same thing.
yeah, just, you know, like ships use.
But on the bigger pterosaurs, they seem to get rid of that. You're because right. They just kind of muscled through it.
Like the Quetzalcoatlus.
Yeah, the really big guys.
Yeah.
Hexel, the next big one's like Hexelnautilus or something like that. Okay. It's another really big pterosaur. But even like true like pterosaur, like the pterodactyl right. from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it didn't have a tail, right?
Yeah, it had a short stubby one.
Yeah.
And they were big enough to kind of, they're man-sized.
Right.
You know, they weigh a lot less, but they're man-sized. So this thing's a Piper Cub airplane, which has a 44-foot wingspan, I believe.
It's pretty big.
But he didn't say if it's the wingspan, you know, roughly the size.
Right.
It's just a massive animal. So
right.
That's just something odd that sticks out to me.
With the tail.
Doesn't matter. I mean, like I said, we don't have all the species.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And this is, you know, they've been gone for 65 million years.
It's kind of
from the
time.
Fossil record.
A little bit.
But other animals have done it, but we'll talk about that.
Are there any bat species with tails?
Now, I don't want to talk about that. At all.
We'll just move on.
Really, there are some long-tailed bats. They're called long-tailed bats.
Okay.
Nothing that dramatic, though. I mean, when you're talking about a long... Nothing like a rat tail hanging down.
Right, yeah. Because trying to picture it, I can't.
But when the kid... So pterosaurs, as far as we know, they were really sight and smell. They had a big olfactory zone. They had big eyes. They did have ears, but they weren't like, as far as we know, external ears. Like more like reptilian ears or bird ears.
There's like holes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not good chambers to collecting. That's what the outside of your ears for is to funnel sound inside.
Into it, yep.
And that's why they have such a dramatic one, is echolocation.
Right, yeah.
Now, he just didn't say anything about this thing having an ear. Who knows what the cone may have been used for. But he yelled, it looked, when he yelled again, louder, it looked harder at him, opened its mouth, didn't make a sound that he could hear.
Yeah.
And he kept calling it a beat, quote, in quotes. I don't know exactly. I can't ask the guy what he meant.
Yeah.
But he never called it a beak. Every time he used the word beak, he used it in quotes. So I don't know if it was more fleshy, not like an actual bird's beak. Pterosaurs had both.
Want me to drop some knowledge on you about what's going on here biologically wise?
Huh.
So that thing on the top of its head, what that function was, you know, scientists still are trying to figure out. It was a sound resonance device on its head. Not devices in technology, just part of its biology. And it would resonate to sounds, you know, and it could open its mouth and direct the direction the sound's coming from. And then that thing would just vibrate like crazy. So it knew where all this stuff was coming from.
It's like an ear.
It's an ear tuning device. Yeah. That's why it didn't make sound. The mouth was...
I can't remember.
The mouth was catching the sound like an ear.
It's like pterosaurs, the dinosaur, the long...
Pompadour.
Those are resonating chambers.
See?
Because they're hollow.
Ah.
You can actually listen to Freaky Fauna Friday, dinosaur sounds. We played some of them where they recreated it and just blew air through them. You weren't there.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one.
Blew air through them. And yeah, I don't know if pterosaurs... I don't think they were sort of hollow like that. I think a lot of people think they were more like antler. Where, because there was definitely a sexual dimorphism in most pterosaurs.
Yeah.
As in the head crest was not nearly as dramatic as it was in the females versus the males.
So
the males had much larger, much more dramatic ones.
That just means, I mean, it's tails all the time. Males are better listeners.
Tapajara is one of the ones that had the craziest looking ones.
Yeah. Males probably.
Yeah.
See, they're just good listeners. That's all it is.
But I don't know. It's obviously we're making some bat connections.
A little bit, yeah. Well, it's a mix, kind of.
Yeah, there's some bat qualities.
Yeah.
I have three more little ones for you, then we'll get into some talking about stuff.
Yeah.
This is another one from the Pine Barrens. So this is all from the state of Wisconsin.
Wow, okay.
This sighting took place in the late 1970s, early 1980s, in an unnamed Wisconsin city. The witness reports that one day they were doing farm work with his sister. He noticed a strange creature flying in the sky above them. The witness claimed that he was driving a tractor to move some crates of vegetables. The creature then, resembling something from the age of dinosaurs, flew overhead. The creature possessed a long pointed head, oddly curved wings, a dark body color, a long tail with a ball-like shape at the end of it.
Okay.
Which is also common for some pterosaurs.
Yeah.
The witness tried explaining to his siblings what he saw. They did not believe him. The creature was never seen again.
Go figure. How convenient.
Sighting number two. This is in a place in a city called Brookfield in September of 1988. The witness report that they were staying on Elm Brock Memorial Hospital awaiting for the birth of his first child. He caught the sight of a giant unknown flying creature through the hospital window. The witness claimed that the creature's wingspan was easily 15 feet. Featherless, leathery skin, yeah. A long beak and a thin head with a long crest off the back of it. The creature, which was as big as a pickup truck, flew towards the window before darting back above the hospital and out of sight. The man, unable to compare it to any living bird, just said it looked like a parrot or pterodactyl.
Hmm. Well, that one's easy, though, what that was. You know what that one is, right?
The stork delivering the baby.
Exactly. He said it himself, just waiting for my baby to show up.
He's getting onto the roof to deliver the baby. Here you go.
And then 5 minutes after that, his baby showed up. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Oddly, odd consequences.
Ain't it?
Ain't it odd?
I need you to do it.
So why do you think it was flying right at the hospital?
Probably saw its reflection.
That's what I was thinking, too. If it's real, if that story's real.
And then it was like, oh, crap.
I'm going to fight that one.
Yeah, there's our internal pterodactyl or pterosaur thoughts.
They always talk like a villain to me. An old time. Yeah. Hey, see?
Yeah, see, I see you over there in the building. Yeah. You're in my territory, kid.
The third sighting took place in the city of Edgington in 1996. The witness reports that he was 8 years old and living in his farm. He caught sight of an odd-looking creature flying in the sky above him. The witness describes the creature as being very large. It did not resemble a bird at all. The wings were absolutely gigantic. The body was very streamlined. The color was brownish tan. The creature possessed a long tail with a bulb on the end of it. The witness was able to watch the creature for nearly 3 minutes before it completely vanished from view.
Hmm. Well, so all three were in Wisconsin. All three having like the similar.
You know, like I said, there's literally thousands of sightings.
Isn't that nuts?
I just picked some. I mean, I've only did eight, I think, and we've already been talking for 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, what does that tell you? I mean,
we're going to do a whole episode. Probably part two on this movie just called Daytona Beach.
Okay.
Because for whatever reason, we can talk about it here in a second.
We'll call it the Daytona 500 Sightings of Pterosaurs.
Do 500 sightings? Maybe that'll be our first 24-hour.
Gosh. No, I think I'd rather jump
another
off.
Another pterosaur.
Yeah. Where's my bathtub and my
toaster?
All
right. So what's happening?
Yeah.
Before we just talk about the elephant in the room, obviously, I have a lot of other things that could be happening.
All right.
Obviously, my last one is living pterosaurs.
Well, before we... Let's just reestablish. We had the one in UK, Georgia. We got Wisconsin that just happened.
Illinois and Ohio.
Illinois and Ohio. Okay.
California.
California. So we pretty much spanned the whole U.S. Pretty much.
I did the historic one because I thought it was funny that...
The UK one?
Yeah.
Yeah?
The first eight paragraphs are just who owned the forest.
Gotcha, yeah.
Because it was from a UK book, and that's how they write everything.
That's a lot.
Yeah, going back to 1288, I think.
Well,
I guess
when there's so much history there, you gotta kind of tell it all.
There's so much history here. We just don't care.
Well, history. History is what's written down.
The mound builders?
Yeah, we erased all that.
They wrote it down on the ground.
And we erased it, so.
With bulldozers in 1908.
Exactly.
The state of Ohio.
Look it up.
It happened. The state of Ohio did do that.
But yes, go on. Sorry.
Okay. First one I have is birds being mis-ID'd.
Okay. Sandhill cranes.
Stop playing with your chair.
Sorry.
Sandhill cranes wasn't even on my list. That's funny that you said that, though. Blue herons.
Was on your list?
I'm going to tell you a story. Okay. This is a story that happened to my sister, Raina. I don't know if she's listening, but it's funny. We were in our little John boat, me, Luke, and Raina. So that's my brother and my sister. And she was like, There's a pterodactyl flying around. There's a pterodactyl, screaming it. And we finally, me and Luke figured out what she's talking about. It's a blue heron. And she didn't have her glasses on. So the two legs, they throw their legs behind them.
Look like a tail?
Well, they have a long, it looks like a long skinny tail with a knob on the end.
Yeah, their feet.
How many of these stories? Long skinny tail with a knob on the end. Big, several of these were blue. blue herons. Like, literally, they're bright blue colors. Like, they even have feathers off the back of their head for sexual display, like a head crest. So I do want to put that out there. I do think some, I'm not saying any of the ones we read today or anything like that. Some of these are just sandhill cranes, blue herons, the large storks, and, you know.
And I can see, like, if you have never seen
a blue heron in person, seen a wood stork, you do not realize how big they are.
Oh, yeah.
You do not realize they're red and brown. Yeah. How many of these were red and brown?
A lot, yeah.
And they're huge, and they make scary noises.
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard
of I told you about the, I was peeing and the Velociraptor sound came out behind. Oh. That was a wood stork.
Stork, yeah. It's nuts.
And they're really secretive.
Yeah. See, same, herons too, like.
Herons are secretive, even though you see them. Like, out of all the big storks and herons, they're probably the most up in public.
Yeah.
But they still don't like being close to things.
Oh, no. Heck no. You, the only time I've ever seen one was at a very good distance, and you just almost had to sneak up
on. A blue heron?
Yeah.
You don't see them in the creek all the time?
That's, but it, I do, but okay, it was okay. A very good distance away, and there's no way, by the time I get down.
We never got close. I worked on the rivers and boats, and, you know, I would see them constantly, never got close. Whereas one that was asleep, we shocked.
Oh, really?
By accident. I didn't see him, and he was asleep with his head tucked in.
Oh, no.
And we got close to the bank, and he just, we scared the crap out of him, obviously, and he scared the crap out of us.
Yeah, I bet.
They make odd noises. But the noises, the long beak, the color patterns, they fit. The tail flying behind them, you know, they look odd when they're
going. They do, yeah.
Not, obviously, this isn't got for the leathery wings.
No.
You know, but we talk about it all the time, is that your brain can lie to you.
For sure.
And so if you have pterosaur in the mind or whatever, you watch Jurassic Park, whatever, and you see something large, unidentified flying.
Yeah.
Pterosaur.
Especially if you've never seen, like, a stork before or heron in person.
Especially, like, the big ones.
Yeah. If you've never seen, like, I'm sure you've seen pictures of them, but picture them usually aren't of them, like, flying. And still, a picture doesn't do anything injustice.
Every place I read today has them.
Has herons and storks. And
yeah. Including the UK.
Cranes. And, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They call them gray herons there, but they're the same species.
Okay. Okay.
They look identical.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
No, it's... So that's my first one. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, obviously, it has to be a possibility because what? You literally witnessed it. Your sister...
And she was young, obviously.
But still.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes no difference at that, whether you're young or old. If you have an idea of what a pterodactyl is and you see something that looks like it, you're going to say pterodactyl. Regardless of age, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I just had to put that out there. I think it happens. I think... The more you read, like I said, there's hundreds, if not thousands of these stories of people in the U.S. seeing pterodactyls. And I'm not saying, because there's ones I avoided, like the Texas pterodactyl, which has been seen on telephone poles. Daryl Sims shared it on our show.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But that thing's absolutely huge. It's been seen hanging off of telephone poles and like fences and stuff like that. It's, you know, the size of like a couple of guys standing on top, you know, huge.
Yeah.
But this is like these ones, the long tail, these little guys, these 4 foot long ones. They're the exact size of herons and cranes.
Yeah.
They're in all the areas herons and cranes are. Herons and cranes are normally pretty secretive.
Very well could be.
And they migrate, right? So they're only really flying long distances just short times of the year.
Right, yeah.
So they don't really leave their swamps and wetlands very often.
You'd have to be almost be in the right place, right time to even see one of them.
Yeah. I guess I've never seen a wood stork migration. I've seen sandhill crane migration twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked out.
You know, I was just saying, you're always out there, yeah.
I've only seen sandhill crane migration twice.
Mm-hmm.
Wood stork, I don't think I've ever seen them migrate.
Yeah.
I've just seen them end up places. Like, they live there.
And who's to say there's not some stork or heron or big bird out there that we still haven't discovered yet?
Or the mis-ID'd one, like the shoebill, Monsters of the Marsh. One of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
Exactly.
Was a shoebill stork, not related to storks or herons, but that similar niche, from Africa... We didn't know about. They're here.
Here, and when they fly, they're very much gliders.
They look scary.
Yeah.
They look like a dinosaur coming to get you.
I wish we had one as a pet.
Mm-hmm.
We need one for the studio.
My next one for you. Ghost.
Ghosts. I wanted to sit in the sounds.
No. We talked about this with some, like, Bigfoot. Actually, we did this in our Bigfoot episode, that Neanderthal ghost or, you know, this ancient species, you know, that went extinct.
Yeah.
If you want to believe, and I don't believe this, but if you want to believe humans can be ghosts, then why can't prehistoric species
animals,
be ghosts?
Yeah, yeah.
So what if that's what we're seeing? That's why there's no evidence of them. That's why they're seen for just short periods of time. They don't really, as far as the pterosaurs go, there's not a lot of reports of them here in the U.S. attacking people.
Yeah.
Thunderbirds attack people, but they have feathers. Like, people like see the Thunderbirds a lot of
completely
times.
Different.
There's some convoluting between Thunderbirds and pterosaurs here
yeah.
in the U.S.
Yeah, for zoologists. Sure.
Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, the one that attacked the boy in Illinois had feathers. Bunch of eyewitnesses.
Right.
It was a big bird.
Right.
Like, the Thunderbirds that were made all the way to West Virginia were birds. They were big feathered animals, you know? So, I don't know. This ghost thing, if you want to think that the Earth can hold, like, resonant energies.
Right.
Pterosaurs were on the Earth for a long period of time, around mm-hmm. 100 million years. So, yeah, they were here for a while. Why couldn't they, if they're, you want to believe ghosts can stick around.
Why can't
they? They would be a candidate. They yeah. made it a long time before they disappeared.
Exactly, yeah.
What do you think of that one?
I mean, I agree with you on that, pretty much what you said. I don't think that I hold any different or have anything to add to it. Any significant differences.
And that's not one I believe in.
Yeah.
I just, it's out there.
Can leave it as a possibility.
Yeah. Forest elementals. And by this, I mean nature elementals, wind yeah. elementals and stuff like that. If you want to, and we're going to do an elemental episode. The more I've researched into it, the more I feel my opinions on this stuff changes, right?
Yeah. Right.
Anybody should, you should change and you should grow. I think elementals are more and more real, I guess, in my head.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're necessarily, they don't have to be demonic or they don't have to be good. I think it's something that maybe in creation that is just, we see less than 6% of the light spectrum.
Right.
So let's say there's just some other form of life that God made outside of that 6%.
Right.
And we just get to see the reactions that they cause on our part of the environment.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Which is tornadoes or whatever, you know, or, you know, windstorms.
Something.
Ice yeah. storm, you know, all these things. They're just a byproduct of their existence. But the people, depending on which culture you look into elementals, whether it's Native American, African, or the two I really looked at.
Like how they describe them or yeah, something? Okay.
They take animals' shapes that kind of signify the powers
their
of their
existence.
Environment. The powers of their elements.
Okay.
So like orcas in the northern tribes are very common for water because it's the king of the ocean. Orcas right now in nature are the king of the ocean. They killed
everything
off that was even competing with them.
Right.
They hunt the biggest animals ever on the planet. You know, it doesn't always go as planned, but they signify the power of the ocean.
Right.
So what if some of our wind ones take pterosaurs as their shape? The largest flying animals that we've ever known about, some of the strongest flyers, some of the longest distance flyers.
Yeah.
The animal that truly embodies, and Avatar, the airbender, you know, they
right.
did this. Every element had an animal associated with it.
Fire, water, earth, and wind.
Yeah, of those, you know, and it depends on the culture, what elements you look at.
Exactly, yep.
But what if that's what's happening here, is these elementals, that's just their preferred shape.
Their form at that moment.
Pterosaurs happen to be the strongest flying group to exist on the planet ever. So that's their favorite shape, you know. That's birds got close, but never quite, you know.
Yeah.
The pterotaurs didn't get big enough, and they went extinct pretty quick as far as they popped up.
And maybe what if something just that's too big, you know, it's hard to change into that form. It's just too big.
Well, I just think, I don't know.
I don't know either.
But Quetzalcoatlus, you know, 42-foot wingspan. When it was walking on the ground, some 22-foot tall.
Right. But do we see, there's still like reports of them modernly from time to time or no?
Big pterosaurs. Yes, there are very large pterosaurs. That'd be more like the pterosaurs you see in Texas.
Okay.
And South America, which are the true giants.
Giants, yeah.
In the Midwest, the UK and the Canada has a lot of the 5 to 7 footers.
Gotcha.
But like the closer you get to the equator, we didn't even touch Africa or Asia
right,
or
yeah.
Australia. They all have pterosaur sightings.
Or Antarctica.
I don't know of any Antarctic pterosaur sightings. Not saying it doesn't happen, but there's only like 60 people down there.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be flying around the air
frozen.
They'd be gliding, that's for sure.
I don't know. What do you think about the elementals?
I like the idea because I'm with you. I think elementals are a thing. I just do. I believe in them. I believe in them being a thing.
I used to think they were all demons or all demonic.
Okay.
I don't think they're all demonic now.
Okay.
In my personal opinion, I think they're part of creation.
Yeah.
That we just don't get privy to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's some pieces of the equation you just...
Like the insides of the earth. Like we're told how it works. And I kind of believe more conventional. And
yeah.
You believe whatever you want to believe. And that's fine because we neither of us will be able to prove either one. Yep.
We'll never know.
But that's something that exists, whatever it is, it exists.
Right.
That we can't see.
I think we
feel
the effects of it. Yep.
Whether it's earthquakes, landslides, you know, whatever.
Tsunamis or volcanic eruptions.
It's kind of what I think elementals are. They may not be sentient. They may be a background computer program, essentially, of the universe.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, like a... What would you describe that as? Like something running in the background of your computer, that like little, checking
that,
for
that little paperclip that hops up.
Yeah, he's a cryptid.
Forest elemental pterosaurs.
Right. Yeah, he's a computer elemental.
But yeah, so yay nay.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like this guy, you gotta always conclude that, especially when you're out in nature near big, forests Jeez. And woods. I had like two burps back to back that like hiccuped out. But you around big woods, water, things like that. It just seems to be like elementals are around. They're there. I don't split it, but I think they're there. And so I can't rule this out.
And every culture pretty much has some version of an elemental.
All around the globe. And globally.
Yeah. It depends on, you know, what culture, maybe, whether they're evil or not.
Maybe they are the globe. Maybe it's old Earth.
Mother Earth. Here you go. Yeah, that's a mushroom.
Maybe elementals are mushrooms.
Remember we talked about in our episode, mushrooms work with elementals.
What if they're just projections of the conscious projections of the mushroom?
Well, that's
exploring the 3D
world.
That's
what controls the elementals. They ride them around. So you see a mushroom riding a pterosaur.
Yeah.
There's a t-shirt idea for the contest.
Ooh, you're getting into your theory that you don't like about dinosaurs being avatars.
These aren't dinosaurs.
So it's so different.
Stumped you for a second.
Wait a minute. Like, yeah, I guess you're right, but they only existed at the same time.
All right. My second to last one is time slips.
Yeah.
I promise we got a big thing coming about time slips.
Oh, yeah. Just check the art for this episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to assume it's the brontosaurus coming out of the time portal.
I hope so now.
Yeah, it better be. Anyways, the time slips, that these are living creatures. Primeval, I brought up several times on the show over the last couple of years, was a TV show just about that.
Right.
Past and future animals, you know, there's these key points on the Earth, you want to call them ley lines, whatever, where there's focus energy, and basically a portal and an animal can just walk through on accident.
When the stars align.
Obviously, they freak out because there's a T-Rex now in downtown London.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to do. Like, you know, it's a lot.
All of his vegetation's gone.
Yeah.
The world is gray now.
Pterosaurs, that may be happening to them. There's a theory that these portals appear most often above sea level, like they're above the ground.
Right, in the sky.
So that's why we don't get a lot of dinosaurs. We don't get a lot of prehistoric animals using them. Pterosaurs are always flying.
So they can always
run into it. So what if they're running into them all the time?
Yeah.
Or more common. I'm telling you, there's thousands of sightings. Mm. Out of all the dinosaurian, you know, prehistoric, like these ancient animal cryptids.
Yeah.
These are the guys that are seen the most often.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm talking, there's hundreds of dinosaur sightings. There are thousands of pterosaur sightings.
Literally. We'll find out when we do the Daytona episode next. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. This is kind of, what do you think, time slips?
I mean, just fall back on it. I think they do exist. I think we have examples, not just of pterosaurs, but of other, you know, dinosaurs, I'll put that in quotes, you know, of being spotted, you know, whether it's in Canada or I forget the other areas in Asia and stuff like that, with, you know, dinosaurs being seen out in the woods. So there's other examples of it happening or of it possibly happening. So why can't you just these guys be part of that example as well? Especially if, you know, portals, we're not in the sky enough to see portals opening up. Besides that one that opened up in the sky and swallowed that airplane flight. What was it? MH370. That was basically the same thing.
I just, somebody on Insta sent us 2 days ago, something disappeared into a mountain. I said it looked like a portal to me.
Wow. What do you mean something?
Like a UFO.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like disappearing into a mountain. I don't know what to call it. A big ball of light.
Right.
Like.
Yeah.
It could be, I think it was metal because it was shiny, but the way the sun was catching it, it just looked like a ball of light.
Right. Yep.
But yeah, time slips, I think they're real. I just don't know what they are. But because
time is an illusion.
We'll do it whenever. I think we'll do a whole episode on just gravity and time.
I was puked.
Because I think there's some really interesting thoughts that I think you could get with, especially with time, with how some people I've heard explain it. It's very fascinating. The arrow of time, which is a way for physics to explain time.
Yeah.
As not physical, but
tangible,
a fabric part of the universe.
Measurable. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
My last one, the one everybody's been waiting for. Pterosaurs just survived into modern day.
Yeah.
Now let's look at mass extinctions we did several weeks ago.
Yep.
So the end of the dinosaurs, the mass extinction for them, you know, as far as mass extinction go, was not as horrible as some of them.
Right.
Like the Silurian, you know, the mass extinction when it rained forever.
Rained fire.
It rained plasma and fire, but yeah. also rain.
And earthquakes and volcanoes going off.
It just was, when 98% of everything died.
Yeah.
Everything. Not land animals, not vertebrates.
That's what you call a scorched earth.
When insects have a big population drop, you know it's bad.
They were doing something bad.
Insects do not care. So what animals survived the mass extinction of the dinosaurs? It was pretty much the rule of thumb for paleontology is animals smaller than a bread box.
Okay.
What people think of, and this I've been guilty of this a long time ago, is the big pterosaurs. Memorable species of the family.
Mm-hmm.
You think of Quetzalcoatlus, you think of Tapajara, you know, you think of these absolute giant flying animals. There were plenty of pterosaurs that could fit in your hand.
Right, little tiny guys.
That were the same size as the birds that survived.
Like those little monkeys that can fit in your hand? What are those called?
Slow loris.
The what?
The slow loris.
Okay.
The only venomous mammal.
Really?
Or the only venomous primate, sorry.
Okay.
But they leak their venom out of their armpits and they have to rub it on you. They're weird. Check out Freaky Fauna Friday. Okay. Solaris are weird.
Yeah. All right.
So these animals smaller than a bread box. Mammals, reptiles, fish, all kinds of things survived. Even dinosaurs survived for a little bit after. And you can get into the weeds about our bird dinosaurs and stuff like that. There's fossil evidence that some of the really small dinosaurs survived past the mass extinction, but were quickly outcompeted by mammals.
Okay.
They couldn't compete. Once a lot of the big predators disappeared, mammals like rats and stuff like primitive things like teeth. That would just took off and you couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
And we see that with islands and stuff like that with large birds.
Oh, yeah.
Like rats, they get on an island, they'll kill every bird.
Mm-hmm.
Like every egg will be eaten. It doesn't matter how good the parent is.
Ugh, rats.
Yeah. Listen to the giant rats episode.
No, it's so
this
bad.
This is the throwback episode, if you couldn't tell.
Is it?
We've made mention of like eight other episodes. Every
other episode. Well, we've done so much now.
It's getting there, but either.
Mm-hmm.
But forever, I'm like, there's no way pterosaurs survived in the modern day. Same with mosasaurs. Mosasaurs, my reason for them is why crocodilians survived so well and turtles survived so well,
mm-hmm.
why mosasaurs probably didn't after the mass extinction
is
metabolism.
So okay.
Not size. There's mosasaurs that were the sizes like snakes.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, 5 foot long in the fresh water. Same with crocodiles. Same with turtles.
A little pygmy mosasaur?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they live in freshwater like lakes and stuff like that. So they were still big for their environment, just not compared to the 50-foot monster that lived in the ocean.
Yeah.
But they had higher metabolisms. They had controlled body temperatures.
Okay.
So they needed to eat food more regularly. So after the mass extinction, when all these food chains were disrupted, they didn't do so hot when crocodiles and turtles were like, I'll go sit in a hole for a year and not worry about eating.
Right, yeah.
You know?
I'll freeze myself.
Yeah,
as long as I can breathe.
I'll just lay here, you know.
Yeah.
The crocodiles and alligators do that. Well, they'll be like, if I eat once a good meal every year and a half or a couple small meals every year, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
And they just breed when they can. When they get abundancy, they'll breed.
Yeah.
So.
What a life.
Pterosaurs probably did the same thing, where all the big species were just wiped out. Even if, like, some individuals survived, we're talking that, you know, it's a horrible mass extinction.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about some of the tiny guys. I'm going to try to say these names. These are frogmouth pterosaurs.
Frogmouth pterosaurs, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yuga orathids. Yuga orathids.
Okay.
These are like the tiny, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of them, but they're pretty cool looking.
Okay.
We'd probably keep them as pets. They were completely furred, or their version of furred.
These look awesome.
But they were very much this weird little thing between like a bat and a bird. They kind of did both niches. In my opinion, they would have been a good candidate to survive through mass extinction.
Okay.
Now, a lot of species, it's called species radiation. So let's say these guys did survive, but the big guys didn't. So why are we still seeing big guys today?
Okay.
Right?
Time slips.
Well, yes, but species radiation. They have the same genetic packages as their cousins. They get 40 foot. They can. You know, species radiation is when the niches are open. Species happen really fast.
And they fill those niches.
So after the environment stabilized, if they did survive, they bounced back and some of their species got big again. So these were the guys, some of these small species had the spade tail. That is why it may have carried into the big ones.
Ah,
this is a vestigial trait.
Yeah.
But they never got back to taking over the planet because by the time they bounced back,
other
birds and bats
did.
Were
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
So a lot of the middle niches were already taken. So these stepping stone niches is what it's called to get to those giant apex predators.
Right.
It's, they can't just jump, you know, from being something the size of a frog to being something that's the size of a Piper Cub aircraft.
Yeah, that'd be hurt coming out.
Yeah.
Giving birth.
So they may have had a couple species pop out right after the environment's restabilized. You know?
Right, yep.
And they may have became really rare. Never extinct, never just gone.
Just rare.
Super rare. So if that happened, where are they, right? If there is animals that are 30 foot long or 30 foot wingspans flying around, why are we just getting every once in a while sightings of them? And like I said, it's a lot of sightings. You know, probably up there with Bigfoot every year, but all across the planet. So let's talk about where are they nesting?
Hmm.
I personally believe these are much more like albatrosses.
So nesting in high, like mountainous?
Islands.
Islands, okay.
Albatross, I believe, only nest on a couple islands in the world. The whole population of albatrosses.
Did not know
they
this.
They fly several thousand miles without landing.
Dang.
So this is even, they're thermal vent gliders.
Ooh,
so pterosaurs, these pterosaurs that may have re-evolved into these niches may have done the same thing.
Right.
Where they are, you know, they're fish eaters. A lot of pterosaurs were fish and small animal eaters. So these guys may have specialized where the birds and the mammals couldn't, being in the ocean.
Gotcha.
You know, gliding over the ocean, chasing schools of massive fish, you know, being in, we talked about, you know, several episodes ago with the bloop of actually how big the ocean actually is.
Okay.
Yeah. People do not realize, if you, like, we're like, we cross the ocean all the time. No, you stay in a very narrow shipping lane.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you leave that somewhere, you can disappear
instantly.
Yeah.
Literally instantly.
Cargo ships disappear all the time.
And they're the size of buildings.
Bigger.
Yeah.
So I think people get that. We feel like the Earth's so small. And it's really not. You know, 71% of the surface is water. So I think what may be happening, personally, is that they're at least nesting on volcanic outcropped islands.
Okay.
Like albatrosses and boobies and like all these other large marine birds.
Safe spaces, basically.
Yeah, there's no predators for them. They're fine. You know, besides a couple of seahawks and stuff like that that get to the islands. But for a pterosaur, there's not a lot going to mess with your nest if you're sitting on it.
No, and if you're like 8 foot tall.
If you're a 30 foot wingspan, not a lot besides other pterosaurs.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So that's kind of where I have answered that question. Why don't we see them more often? It's because I think 90% of the time, they stay over the oceans. I think if you look at a lot of these in Midwest, you know, obviously we had some in Ohio and stuff like that. Birds, which these aren't birds, but I'm making a lot of comparisons with birds, show up out of their flight range all the time, but it's always one rare one. Like my example here in Ohio was we had a neotropical cormorant.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In Logan, which was like 2,400 miles out of its range.
And people went nuts over it, didn't
they? Yeah, hundreds of birders were there, which because it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
I think even Ralph showed up.
Probably. I think Ralph was there in the bushes.
Yeah.
I think he just took it.
His radar senses were tingling. He flew himself. He was so excited.
So I think that they're staying over the oceans and that every once in a while they fly over continentals, you know, and to go places and stuff like that. Yeah. A wanderlust is something that happens in a lot of young birds.
Where they're just looking for love?
They'll just kind of go around, and then they leave, you know, or they die, they get shot down. There's tons of stories from the Old West, them shooting thunderbirds and killing them. Jeez. So if they were seeing these younger, you know, what we're going to assume are males.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's kind of where I have that. And how did they survive, like we said? The small ones survived, and they species radiation back out into larger individuals.
Yeah.
Because that happens. We've witnessed that happen with cichlids in Africa and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on that one?
I think that one's probably the most likely, to be honest.
The most likely?
Yeah.
Not ghost?
No.
No, and that's an opinion of mine that's changed over the last 3 years dramatically.
What, ghosts?
No.
No.
Pterosaurs surviving the mass extinction event. Mosasaurs, I'm still not sold on. Andy, one of our longtime listeners, me and him have talked about that a lot. I'm just not sold on true mosasaurs. I think I'm still more in the marine crocodile taking over that niche.
Being
absolutely massive. But I don't know. Who knows? Anything's... Wait. Oh, let me get back to it.
Wrong page. Who knows? Anything could be possible.
Oh, there
it's
we
like
go.
Music to me. It's like a knife through hot butter.
Well, this has been a really long episode, but if you had to put one, what would you pick?
I'm just saying that's not how the saying goes, but... if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with the last one.
That they lived through the mass extinction?
Yeah, I think they made it. They just are hanging on. They may be extirpated in some areas, but they ain't gone yet.
I just think, like, the continental stuff, the birds took over.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't compete.
Well,
eagles, for example, raptors, true raptors, as in far as eagles and the, you know, their family, are really good at killing other predators in their niche.
Oh, yeah.
Them and great horned owls.
Oh, yeah.
Murder each other constantly.
Oh, really?
Ospreys and eagles kill each other on sight.
Have you seen that video of it was some eagle or hawk? I don't know. Sitting, like, I was filming it. It had like its nest on like the side of like a building or house. You know, like they built a little bird box. And it's sitting up there in its nest, like perching with its little eggs. And you see this other bird just swoop in and fly and just land in it. And it's just like hopping around, looking around. And this big hawk or eagle, I don't know what it was, is like looking at it like, what are you doing in here? Looking at it, just kind of sits up. This other bird's like hopping around, doesn't even realize it's there, it looks like. And then this thing just, wham, snatches this little bird up and just holds it down. It's trying to like fly away and it's holding it down with its 1 foot. Like, what are you doing in here? It was pretty awesome how fast it was. But yeah, it just destroyed that bird instantly.
Another reason probably why they're not hanging out in the continental shelves very much is food. Besides the Great Lakes, you got to think, if they are fishing, which we think some pterosaurs were floaters, like they'd actually float like waterfowl and like seagulls and stuff like
that. How'd they take back off though?
With running. You know, the pterosaurs actually could jump and fly. So they had the leg structure to actually kind of hop.
Spring like a frog.
And that's why like giant birds, like trumpeter swans have trouble. They have to have a long flight way.
Right, yeah.
Pterosaurs could actually kind of hop and get up off the ground and start flying.
Just enough to get going.
Yeah.
It's a good adaptation.
Well, when you're 20 foot tall, you have to, because there's no runway big enough.
No.
You cannot run fast enough.
You better live in very specific areas.
The Great Plains, the Salt City, like.
Or on top of a mountain and just jump off.
And you got to crawl back up every time.
Every time, yeah.
But no, I think I'm there with you. I think that people are really seeing pterosaurs. I think they may be a couple species that survived the mass extinction. And
just got to believe sometimes.
Speciated back out.
Just believe there's things out there in the world that are crazier than you can imagine that do exist. So
I think the government's shooting them.
Yes, absolutely. They shoot a lot of things, including their enemies and including people that try to stop their agenda.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I have been J Clone 70.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cribbins the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.